a piece Robert had composed for her. She died before the last notes had faded away.
Clementine Wamaria, storyteller and activist. Safety should be a birthright. Born December 18th, 1988, Rwanda. Once upon a time was Clementine's favorite phrase. Every night, she would listen to the magical stories her nanny told her. Every morning, she would go to kindergarten. Every afternoon, she would come home to play under the mango tree. And every evening, she would have dinner with her family. She was a happy child. One day, though, her beloved nanny disappeared. Shortly after, Clementine stopped going to kindergarten. Then her parents forbid her to play outside. Then they all moved into the smallest room of their house, and they kept the lights off at night. Finally, Clementine's parents put her and her sister Claire in a car so they could be driven to their grandma's. 6-year-old Clementine and 9-year-old Claire arrived safely, but after 2 days, their grandma told them that they had to run. The same people who had made their nanny disappear were now looking for them. The sisters walked for days, weeks, and months. Clementine didn't know where she was or why her parents weren't there. After spending 7 years on and off in African refugee camps, Claire and Clementine eventually arrived in Chicago to start a new life. Clementine went back to school, where she studied history and learned about the Rwandan genocide. She came to understand that in the world, there are many children who, like her and Claire, have been displaced and have lost their families. She became a storyteller and an activist. Through her stories, she helps refugees cultivate courage, resilience, and hope, even in the middle of chaos.
Corrie Ten Boom, watchmaker. The measure of a life, after all, is not its duration, but its donation. Born April 15, 1892, died April 15, 1983, the Netherlands. Once upon a time, a girl named Corrie was born in a watch shop in Haarlem, Netherlands. Corrie's grandfather had been a watchmaker, as had her father. And when Corrie grew up, she decided to follow family tradition and became the first licensed female watchmaker in Holland. But making watches wasn't the only family tradition Corrie followed. The Ten Booms were devout Christians who believed in opening their house to anyone in need. So when Jews started being persecuted during the Second World War, Corrie knew she needed to help. She built a secret room behind a false wall in her bedroom, and she joined a network called the Dutch Underground, which protected people being hunted by the Nazis. Corrie installed a buzzer to signal danger. Every time soldiers came to search the shop, she would ring the buzzer, and the people hiding in her house would have about a minute to disappear into the secret room. One day, a Dutch informant betrayed Corrie and sent the Nazi secret police known as the Gestapo to raid her home. They found evidence that she had been helping Jews and members of the Dutch underground, and they arrested her and her father. But they were unable to find the secret room where 6 people were hiding. Corrie and her father were sent to prison for almost a year. They saved more than 800 Jews, as well as many members of the Dutch underground. Corrie became a symbol of courage, unity, and unwavering dignity for people from all religious backgrounds and walks of life.
Eleanor Roosevelt, politician. Do one thing every day that scares you. Born October 11, 1884, died November 7, 1962, United States of America. Once, there was a serious girl called Eleanor Roosevelt. When she was a teenager, Eleanor was sent to school in London. There, she met an extraordinary teacher named Marie Souvestre. Miss Souvestre wanted Eleanor to think for herself, to be free and independent. Eleanor studied with her for 3 years. Then she was summoned home because her grandmother wanted her to get married. Back in the United States, Eleanor met another Roosevelt. His name was Franklin Delano. They got married, but soon after, he contracted polio. The disease left him paralyzed from the waist down, but Eleanor didn't let him give up on his dreams. With her determination and support, he went on to become the President of the United States. As First Lady, Eleanor gave speeches, traveled throughout all the states, and became a champion for human rights. She believed that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights, and she was determined to promote those rights in as many countries as possible. After her husband died, Eleanor was named the U.S. delegate to the United Nations. She became the chairperson of the Commission on Human Rights and led the creation of one of the most important documents of the 20th century, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This beautiful document inspired governments to pass laws protecting human life and encouraged citizens to take action when their fundamental rights were denied. Thanks to Eleanor and to the tireless work of many representatives from all over the world, freedom, equality, dignity, respect, and safety became common goals for all people and all nations.
Ellen DeGeneres, comedian and TV host. People always ask me, were you fun as a child? No, I was an accountant. Born January 26th, 1958, United States of America. One night, Ellen dreamt of a bird in a cage. In the dream, the bird realized that there was enough space between the bars to fly away. Ellen knew exactly what the dream meant. She was a comedian, and she starred in a popular TV show where she played a woman who loved men. In reality, though, Ellen loved women, but she couldn't tell anybody. At the time, her bosses thought that if the show's fans knew she was a lesbian, they would stop watching. But keeping silent didn't feel right to Ellen. She didn't want to hide anymore, and she wanted other gay people across the world to see that they were not alone. So, in one of the episodes of her show, her character came out to her therapist, who was played by Oprah Winfrey. It was the first time in history that a lead character on a television program was openly gay. Next, Ellen told the public that she, too, was gay. Her revelation sent shockwaves through American media. Her show was eventually canceled, and Ellen found herself jobless and depressed. For 3 years, she didn't receive any offers of work. Then one day, the phone rang. "Would you like to play a fish with memory issues in a new Pixar movie?" the caller asked. Ellen was ecstatic. The fish, named Dory, became an iconic character. Today, Ellen is a superstar. She received the Presidential Medal of Freedom for her courage, and her talk show is watched every day by millions of people. "Find out who you are and figure out what you believe in," she likes to say. "Even if it's different from what your neighbors believe in and different from what your parents believe in."
Florence Chadwick, swimmer. I kept a mental image of the shoreline in mind while I swam. November 9th, 1918 to March 15th, 1995, United States of America. The ocean was Florence's favorite place. Her parents would watch her from the beach as she swam and swam and swam. She was such a strong swimmer that everyone expected her to be chosen to compete in the Olympic Games in Los Angeles. But Florence didn't like swimming pools. She thought they were boring. She loved feeling the cold water of the sea, reading the currents, watching for sharks, finding her rhythm with the waves. She loved to swim into the unknown. In open water, she said, you never know which fish you might encounter or how the conditions might change. Even though she could swim farther than almost anyone else, man or woman, Florence wasn't considered a professional athlete. Professional swimmers swam only in pools, and Florence still didn't like pools. So she took a job as a secretary in Saudi Arabia. Whenever she wasn't working, she was out swimming in the Persian Gulf. She saved every penny she could because she had one goal in mind. One day, I will swim across the English Channel. When she was ready, Florence used all her savings to buy her dad a plane ticket from California to France. She hired a boat so he could follow her during the channel crossing, encourage her, and give her snacks along the way. It was still night when she jumped in the water and started to swim. Florence became the first woman to swim across the English Channel in both directions, as well as the first woman to swim the Strait of Gibraltar, the Bosporus, and the Dardanelles. Sometimes she failed, but she never stopped looking for new channels to cross.
Guy Alenti, architect and designer. During the day, a window is a beautiful lamp. Born December 4, 1927, died October 31, 2012, Italy. Once there was a girl who couldn't stand seeing ruins. The Second World War had destroyed her school and all the other places she loved. One day, I'll rebuild everything, she promised herself. Her name was Guy. When the war finally ended, Guy studied to be an architect. At the time, architecture was a field dominated by men, and she was one of only two women in a class of 50. But Guy wasn't easily intimidated. After graduating, she became one of the few female architects involved in rebuilding Italy after the war. Guy saw architecture as a way to manipulate space with light. When she was asked to transform the old Gare d'Orsay railway station in Paris into a museum, she allowed natural light to flood into the huge main hall through a ceiling of glass. For an Olivetti showroom in Buenos Aires, Argentina, she used typewriters and mirrors to create a flight of steps seemingly multiplying into infinity. Guy also worked as a theatrical set designer. Theater taught me the value of action for architecture, she once said. In architecture, a door is just a door, but on stage, a door can be a border, a crossing. She constantly experimented with furniture and everyday objects. She designed a movable table using four bicycle wheels to hold up a floating glass top. For her iconic pipistrello lamp, she created a lampshade shaped like the wings of a bat. Guy worked her entire life designing buildings, museums, objects, and public spaces all over the world. She's regarded as one of the greatest architects of all time.
Georgia O'Keeffe, painter. To create one's own world takes courage. November 15, 1887 to March 6, 1986, United States of America. Once upon a time, a woman saw a door. It was an ordinary door, weathered and old and set into an adobe mud wall. But the woman was no ordinary woman. Her name was Georgia O'Keeffe, and she was a great artist. She spent the whole day making a painting of the door. Then she stepped back and looked at the canvas. There was something not quite right, something missing. So she started another painting. This one was better than the first, she decided, but it still wasn't quite right. She started again and again. She made over 20 paintings of the same door. Every time Georgia set out to paint something, she wanted to get at the heart of whatever it was. A flower, a hillside, an animal skull, or an ordinary old door. She wanted to paint not just what a flower looked like, but what it was, its very essence. When you take a flower and really look at it, she explained, it's your world for the moment. Her paintings of flowers were huge. It was as though one flower could fill the entire sky. With simple shapes and blocks of color, Georgia created a whole new language of art. Her work became hugely popular, and everyone wanted to meet her. But Georgia liked being on her own. She lived in a place called Ghost Ranch in New Mexico. She loved it there, where the desert light was strong and clear, and the landscape was wild and free, just like her.
Jerdy Corey, biochemist. I believe that in art and science are the glories of the human mind. I see no conflict between them. August 15, 1896 to October 26, 1957, Czech Republic. Once upon a time, there was a girl who was named after a warship. Jerdy was 16 years old when she decided she wanted to study science. She was told she couldn't, however, because she didn't have enough background in Latin, mathematics, physics, and chemistry. But Jerdy didn't give up. In 1 year, she managed to study the equivalent of 8 years of Latin and 5 years of math, physics, and chemistry. She was one of the first women to be admitted to the medical school at Charles University in Prague. There, Jerdy became close friends with a fellow student called Carl Corey. He loved her charm, her sense of humor, and her passion for mountain climbing. They graduated, got married, immigrated to the United States, and stayed happily together for the rest of their lives. In the United States, Jerdy and Carl worked side by side in a laboratory and collaborated on scientific papers. Together, they discovered how glucose is broken down by enzymes in the body to release energy. This process came to be known as the Corey cycle. Their research has helped thousands of children with diabetes, and it also won them a Nobel Prize in physiology or medicine. Jerdy was the first American woman to win a Nobel Prize in a scientific discipline, and the Coreys were one of the very few married couples to win the prize jointly. Theirs was a true partnership of equals. Jerdy and Carl worked together on their scientific research to the end of their lives. When she was asked what was the secret to true happiness, Jerdy replied, "The love for and dedication to one's work."
Giusy Nicolini, Mayor. I pledge this award to all those who did not manage to cross the sea because they ended up beneath it. Born March 5th, 1961, Italy. There was a young woman named Giusy who loved the little island of Lampedusa, where she was born. Criminal groups and ruthless corporations wanted to destroy Lampedusa's pristine beaches to build hotels and vacation homes, but Giusy wouldn't let them. As the director of Lampedusa's natural reserve, she said, "It is my duty to protect this island with all my might." Her enemies burned down her father's shop. "You will not intimidate me," she declared. Her car and her boyfriend's van were set on fire. "I will not back down." Lampedusa is a tiny island in the Mediterranean Sea, between Europe and Africa. Many refugees who were fleeing Africa to escape war and build a better life in Europe landed there. The inhabitants of Lampedusa didn't know what to do. "Should we send these people back to protect our island?" they wondered. "Or should we welcome them?" With these questions in mind, they went to vote for their next mayor. Giusy was one of five candidates. People knew she had given all she had to protect the island in the past, so they wanted to hear what she thought about the current situation. Giusy explained her point of view with four simple words: "Protect people, not borders." Lampedusans elected her. As mayor, Giusy reorganized the island's immigration center to be able to welcome as many people as possible. "We want to see many boats on our shores," she insisted, "because that will mean that these people made it here and didn't drown."
Gloria Steinem, activist. Power can be taken, but not given. The process of the taking is empowerment in itself. Born March 25th, 1934, United States of America. Once upon a time, there was a woman who traveled a lot. When she was a child, she traveled in her parents' trailer. When she grew up, she kept traveling by plane, train, bus, even on the back of an elephant. She traveled tens of thousands of miles, year after year, because she had an important message to spread, and she wanted to deliver it in person to as many people as possible. Her name was Gloria Steinem, and her message was simple yet revolutionary. She believed that women and men should be equal. She believed that women should have the right to decide if they want children, that their salaries should be the same as men's, and that they should never have to suffer abuse from their husbands. Gloria was a feminist. Many people thought a woman without a man wasn't really a complete person. Gloria thought that was ridiculous. A woman without a man, she joked, is like a fish without a bicycle. She told women that they could choose whatever life they wanted, and that not everyone had to live the same way. They didn't have to have children if they didn't want to. She also believed that people form families in many different ways, and that any family can be happy, as long as everyone in it loves and respects one another. To this day, Gloria inspires women all over the world to fight for their rights. Sometimes, the truth can make you mad, she admits, but it will ultimately set you free.
Hedy Lamarr, actress and inventor. Try everything, join everything, meet everybody. That's the secret of life. November 9th, 1914 to January 19th, 2000, Austria. Once upon a time, in Austria, a beautiful baby girl called Hedy was born. When Hedy grew up, she married a rich man and moved to a castle. At first, it seemed like a dream come true, but Hedy soon discovered that she and her husband didn't get along. I was like a doll, she said. He thought I had no mind. What's more, her husband sold weapons to Nazis and fascists, and she often had to sit in meetings about military technologies that would be used to advance the agendas of these evil regimes. One day, Hedy decided she'd had enough, so she disguised herself as a maid and escaped to Paris. There she met an important Hollywood producer called Louis B. Mayer. She followed him to Los Angeles and eventually made 18 movies, becoming one of the world's biggest film stars. In between movies, Hedy invented a new kind of traffic stoplight and a capsule that could make sparkling water. And she helped a tycoon build more efficient airplanes by suggesting modifications to their shape. During the Second World War, Hedy learned that the Nazis were able to protect their submarines from torpedoes by jamming the radio signals used to control them. I can solve that problem, she said, and she got straight to work. With the help of a musician friend, she invented a secret communication system that could automatically change the frequency of a torpedo's radio signal, making it impossible for enemies to jam. Her work laid the foundation for the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth technologies we all use today.
Hortensia, orator. Why should we pay taxes when we have no part in public office? Born 42 BCE, Italy. Once there was a woman who knew how to win an argument. Her name was Hortensia, and she lived through a turbulent time in the history of ancient Rome. The Roman emperor, Julius Caesar, had recently been killed, and he was replaced as ruler by Mark Antony, Octavian, and Marcus Aemilius Lepidus. Together, they were called the Triumvirs. The Triumvirs wanted to declare war on the assassins of Julius Caesar, but they needed money to pay for the conflict. So, they decided to tax the property of 1,400 rich Roman women to finance it. Hortensia was one of them. She didn't think it made sense that women had no say in a decision that affected them, however. So, she decided to do something about it. At first, she tried to persuade the triumvir's wives to talk to their husbands, but she wasn't successful. Flavia, Mark Antony's wife, was more interested in protecting her husband's decision than her own rights, and she threw Hortensia out of their house. Outraged, Hortensia pushed her way into the tribunal and made her case with a memorable speech. "Why should we finance your war?" she demanded, "when we have no say in the government, no honors, and no part in public office. We would gladly pay taxes to help protect our country against a foreign invasion, but you cannot force us to sponsor your civil war." The triumvirs were furious, but Hortensia convinced so many people with her speech that the three rulers had to listen to her brilliant reasoning. And in the end, they changed their policy.
Isadora Duncan, Dancer. You were once wild here. Don't let them tame you. Circa May 27th, 1878 to September 14th, 1927. United States of America. Once upon a time, there was a girl who didn't like school. Isadora hated sitting still at a desk when she longed to leap and spin and twirl, to express all the joy of being alive through her body. Deep inside, the girl knew she was born to dance. When she was only 6 years old, Isadora had already become a dance teacher. At the time, everyone thought ballet was the most beautiful type of dance in the world, but Isadora did not. She didn't like the formal elegance of classical ballet. She found it ugly and against nature. She said, "I want to dance like a wave on the ocean or a tree in the breeze, natural and free." When she was 18, Isadora used her last few dollars to buy a ticket on a cattle boat from America to Europe. She traveled around all the great cities, Paris, Berlin, Vienna, and London. She performed on stage and set up groundbreaking dance schools. "In my schools," she announced, "I shall not teach the children to imitate my movements, but to make their own." While dancing, Isadora wore loose white dresses and long trailing scarves. She wanted the cloth to echo and enhance the flowing movements of her limbs. Some people thought she was indecent. "Women should not be so wild and free," they said. But Isadora didn't care. She declared herself to be a dancer of the future, the highest intelligence in the freest body.
J.K. Rowling, writer. It is impossible to live without failing at something, unless you live so cautiously that you might as well not have lived at all. Born July 31st, 1965, United Kingdom. At six, Joanne wrote a short story about a rabbit and titled it Rabbit. At 11, she wrote a novel about seven cursed diamonds. She came from a poor family, and her parents hoped she would pursue a solid career in law or economics. But she decided to study literature. One day, she found herself completely broke. As a single mother with no job and no money, Joanne experienced the pain of failure that her parents had always warned her about. Everything she owned was in a suitcase, including the first three chapters of a story about a boy with magic powers. That boy was called Harry Potter. Her manuscript about Harry was rejected time after time, but finally, one publisher took it on. They printed just 1,000 copies and asked Joanne to change her name to J.K., as they feared young boys would not want to read a book written by a woman. Her agent told her that she shouldn't expect to make money out of her writing, but thankfully, Joanne decided to keep going. The Harry Potter series went on to become the most incredible phenomenon in the history of publishing. The seven books have captured the imagination of hundreds of millions of children and adults all over the world, and they've redefined the meaning of children's literature. Joanne always said failure was crucial to her success. "Had I really succeeded at anything else," she explained, "I might never have found the determination to succeed in the one arena I believed I truly belonged."
Jeanne Barret, housekeeper and explorer. July 27, 1740 to August 5, 1807. France. Once upon a time, a housekeeper called Jeanne disguised herself as a man and sailed around the world. Jeanne looked after the house of a French naturalist named Commerson. One day, he was invited to sail to the New World on an expedition to find and identify new species of plants. Commerson was excited, but his health was poor and he needed someone to accompany him on this long, exhausting voyage. At the time, women weren't allowed aboard French ships, so Commerson and Jeanne came up with a plan. At the very last minute, she would get on the ship disguised as a young man called Jean, and Commerson would hire this stranger as his assistant. The plan worked, and the ship's captain even gave up his large cabin to the two so they would have space for all the special equipment Commerson needed. Jeanne took good care of Commerson, but he was so ill by the time they reached South America that she took over collecting and studying the plants herself. She was unstoppable. In Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, she found a brightly colored vine that Commerson named Bougainvillea after the ship's captain, Bougainville. When Jeanne's real identity was discovered, she and Commerson decided to leave the ship and stay in Mauritius, an island off the coast of Africa. They completed two more scientific expeditions, to Madagascar and the Bourbon Islands, but then Commerson died and Jeanne was stranded. When she finally made it back to France, 1 year later, she had become the first woman in history to circumnavigate the globe.
Joan Beauchamp Proctor, zoologist. Why shouldn't a woman run a reptile house? Born August 5, 1897, died September 20, 1931, United Kingdom. One day, a girl called Joan asked her mom and dad to get her a pet. "I don't want a puppy or a kitten," she said. "I'd love a snake. And some lizards, please." By the time she was 10, Joan was looking after lots of reptiles. One of them, a large Dalmatian wall lizard, was her favorite. They traveled everywhere together and even sat side by side at mealtimes. When she was older, Joan took her pet crocodile to school, much to the teacher's amazement. These creatures fascinated Joan. She became a world expert in herpetology, the branch of zoology dealing with reptiles and amphibians, and she got a job at the British Natural History Museum. Then one day, London Zoo asked her to design a new reptile house. She did an excellent job and became something of a celebrity. Crowds gathered to watch her handling pythons, crocodiles, and huge Komodo dragons. She was named curator of reptiles. A Komodo dragon named Sumbawa became Joan's special pet. Sumbawa followed her everywhere. Joan would stroke and pat her and feed her chicken, pigeon, and eggs. Sometimes she steered the dragon along by holding her tail. Joan understood these animals so well that she knew when they were sick and exactly what to do to make them better. Her own health problems, however, were harder to cure. She was constantly in pain and had been for much of her life. But this didn't stop her from following her passion, even when it meant going to work in a wheelchair, with Sumbawa lumbering along happily behind her.
Johanna Norblad, ice diver. Under the ice, there is no place for fear. There is no place for panic. No place for mistakes. Born November 11, 1975, Finland. Once upon a time, there was a free diving champion named Johanna. She loved diving deep underwater on just a single breath without the use of air tanks. As she swam down with nothing but the slow thump of her heartbeat in her ears, Johanna felt like she was flying. Then, one day, she had a terrible accident. Her leg was so badly broken that the doctors thought they might have to remove it. The only way to save the leg was by plunging it in ice water. It was agonizingly painful, but her leg slowly began to heal. And something else happened that no one had expected. Johanna started to enjoy the feeling of the icy coldness. I felt it was the only place where I could get over the pain. Actually, it was very relaxing, she said. When she was strong enough, Johanna decided to start swimming underneath ice. A film was made about one of her incredible dives. It shows a solitary figure dragging a sled to the middle of a frozen lake, leaving a trail of footprints behind her in the snow. She cuts a triangle into the ice with a saw and sits on the edge. Taking a deep breath, she slips into the black water. A different universe unfolds around her, silver and deep blue-black, silent and beautiful. She swims along like a mermaid at peace with the world. If it hadn't been for the accident, Johanna might never have discovered the joy of ice diving. Sometimes, she says, a curse really is a blessing in disguise.
Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson, computer scientists. In math, either you're right or you're wrong. Katherine Johnson, born August 26, 1918. Dorothy Vaughan, September 20th, 1910. To November 10th, 2008. Mary Jackson, April 9th, 1921, to February 11th, 2005. United States of America. Every day, Katherine, Dorothy, and Mary drove together to NASA, the agency responsible for the American space program. They were all brilliant scientists, and their job was to crack complex math problems to make sure that astronauts could travel safely to space. When NASA bought its first IBM transistor-based computer, only a few people in the world knew how to use it for business, and no one knew how to use it for space travel. So Dorothy taught herself Fortran, the programming language the computer understood, and got the system working. When astronaut John Glenn was about to take off for a trip orbiting the Earth, he said he did not completely trust the computer and asked Katherine to check the trajectory calculations herself. As long as she says the numbers are good, I'm ready to go, he said. When the opportunity to work on the supersonic pressure tunnel came about, Mary volunteered. She specialized in the behavior of air around planes, and she became the first African-American female aeronautical engineer. Katherine, Dorothy, and Mary overcame incredible odds, but their contributions to science and technology remained unknown for many years. Today, they are celebrated as three of the most inspiring figures in the history of space travel.
Katya Kraft, volcanologist. Volcanoes are so powerful, so beautiful, so you can just fall in love with them. April 17, 1942 to June 3, 1991. France. Katya loved volcanoes. She didn't just like to look at pictures of boiling rivers of lava. She wanted to see them for real. In college, Katya met a young man called Maurice, who was as passionate about volcanoes as she was. On their first date, they realized they shared the dream of filming a volcano as it was erupting, something no one had ever done before. They fell madly in love and planned their first trip to an active volcano. From then on, they were hooked. Whenever they heard that a volcano was about to blow, They packed their bags and rushed to the scene. To get the best shots, they would scramble up to the edge of the crater. They wore protective silver suits and helmets so they could withstand the heat from the molten lava, which was more than 1,000 degrees. Katya and Maurice's dream was to ride a boat down a lava flow. They knew their work was extremely dangerous, but they didn't care. To them, there was no sight more beautiful than a volcano erupting right before their eyes. One day, Katya and Maurice were on the slopes of Mount Unzen, an active volcano in Japan. They were a safe distance from the summit, or so they thought. But this time, their calculations were wrong. The explosion was far larger than anyone had predicted, and it sent a boiling cloud of gases, rocks, and ash rolling down the valley. Katya, Maurice, and the members of their team had no chance to escape, and all tragically died.
Kudia Diop, model. If you're lucky enough to be different, don't ever change. Born December 31st, 1996, Senegal. Once upon a time, there was a girl whose skin was as dark as night. Her name was Kudia, and she lived in Senegal. At school, Kudia was bullied because of the color of her skin. Other children would call her hurtful names, and every day Kudia would look in the mirror to see if her skin had gotten any lighter. Her sister showed her the picture of the model Alec Weck. "You're beautiful," she assured her. "See, you could be a model too." One day, Kudia and her sister were walking down a street in Milan, Italy, when they passed a giant mirror. Kudia saw how she stood out from all the other fair-skinned people around them. "I smiled, and it was like sparkles," she said with surprise. "That's why people look at me so much. It's because I'm beautiful." A couple of years later, Kudia accompanied an aunt who needed eye surgery to Paris. There, people would stop her in the streets to take pictures of her. She became a professional model and opened an Instagram account, calling herself the Melanin Goddess. "In Senegal, a lot of girls who are as dark as me bleach their skin because they think they aren't beautiful," she explained. "But every woman is different, and we're all beautiful in our unique way." Today, Kudia campaigns to prevent bullying and is very proud that her 11-year-old brother, who is as dark as she is, told her, "I don't care what other kids say about my skin color. I love it."
Lauren Potter, actress. If you have a disability, keep working hard. Whatever it takes, do it. Born May 10th, 1990. United States of America. The day she was born, Lauren was diagnosed with Down syndrome. Because of her condition, she couldn't walk until the age of 2, but shortly after taking her first steps, she started dancing and acting classes. She loved performing, and her mom encouraged her to follow her passion from a very young age. At school, however, her classmates were not as supportive. Bullies made fun of her, and even made her eat sand. "It was hard," Lauren remembered. "They hurt me." As time went on, her passion for music and dance only grew stronger. She auditioned to be a cheerleader at her high school, but she didn't make the squad. A year later, though, a much bigger opportunity came her way. A chance to play a cheerleader in a national TV show called Glee. Out of the 13 girls who auditioned for the role, the one the show's producers picked was Lauren. The character she played, Becky Jackson, became so popular that kids in her former high school have put posters of her on the walls. "I'm happy they can now see me as I always saw myself," Lauren said. She enjoyed being an actress, but she also wanted to help other people with disabilities. Lauren wanted them to have the opportunity to follow their passions just as she had. She was appointed by Barack Obama to the President's Committee for People with Intellectual Disabilities, and she starred in commercials against bullying. Today, she travels across the country giving speeches, and she says, "It feels amazing to be a role model for people with and without disabilities."
Lima Bowie, peace activist. We must continue to unite in sisterhood to turn our tears into triumph. Born February 1st, 1972, Liberia. Once in Liberia, a woman stopped a war. Her name was Lima, and she was a single mother of four.
Her country was going through a violent civil war. Children were being recruited as soldiers and hundreds of thousands of people were dying. Lima worked hard to help those who had been traumatized by the fighting. One day she was invited to a conference organized by the West African Network for Peacebuilding. Women like me had come from almost all 18 countries in West Africa, Lima recalled. At the conference, she learned about conflict and conflict resolution. The women shared their experiences and talked about what war had taken from their lives. For Lima, it was enlightening. No one else, she thought, is doing this, focusing only on women and only on building peace. She became the leader of a program called the Women and Peacebuilding Network. To recruit other women, she went to mosques for Friday afternoon prayers, to the markets on Saturday mornings, and to churches every Sunday. All the women she spoke to were tired of a war they had never wanted in the first place, a war that was killing their children. Lima and the other women in her network pressured the factions at war to start peace talks. Then they gathered in front of the hotel where the negotiations were taking place, to demand rapid progress. They even blocked the hotel exit to keep the negotiators from leaving until they had reached a deal. When the Liberian Civil War ended, Lima was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize. When women gather, she says, great things will happen.
Lillian Bland, aviator. I have flown. September 22, 1878 to May 11, 1971. United Kingdom. The first time Lillian was in a plane, it was with her boyfriend. He took her up in his glider, but when she asked, "Can I fly it?" he said no, and Lillian got really mad. Shortly after, Lillian's Uncle Robert sent her a postcard of his own little plane flying over Paris. Lillian was in awe. She immediately wrote back, begging him to take her aboard as a passenger, but her uncle said no as well. All right, I will have to do this by myself, Lillian thought. But at the time, it wasn't easy to find a plane in Ireland. No problem, she said to herself. I'll build one. Lillian read everything she could find by the Wright brothers and other famous aviators about how to build a plane. She succeeded in building a flyable biplane, an aircraft with two pairs of wings, then went on to build a full-scale glider, just like the one her boyfriend hadn't let her fly. She called her glider the Mayfly, because, as she said, it may fly, or it may not. Lillian fitted the Mayfly with an engine and found a nice level stretch of empty ground to use as a runway. She couldn't wait to see if her glider would get off the ground. The only problem was that the plane had no tank to hold the fuel. Never mind, she thought. I'll use an empty bottle instead. She did just that, and the plane soared along for about 10 seconds. The Mayfly, designed, built, and flown by the amazing, inventive Lillian Bland, was the first powered aircraft in Ireland.
Lorena Ochoa, golfer. I hit a lot of bad shots. You need to laugh about them and keep moving. Born November 15th, 1981, Mexico. Once, a girl fell out of a tree and broke both her wrists. Her arms were in casts from fingertips to shoulders for 3 months. When the casts came off, her bones were completely mended. It's not a miracle, said the doctor with a smile. I just put magic in the cast. Lorena lived in Guadalajara, Mexico. Her house was near a country club that had a golf course. Sometimes, she would watch her dad play a round of golf on his day off. At first, she only helped him steer his cart. But eventually, she started to play as well. It was immediately clear that, whether the doctor had something to do with it or not, Lorena had a magic touch. At 7, she started competing in and winning golf tournaments. She also played tennis and excelled at that, too. When she won the Junior World Championships in San Diego, though, she decided to focus on golf. Lorena was tiny but strong. She became the top female golfer in the world. Her fans watched in awe when she hit drives longer than anyone else's. But her best game was with the short irons. The magic in her wrists made her unbelievably precise. She became known as La Tigresa, the tiger. But Lorena wasn't happy being a world champion only in golf. She also opened a foundation that operates an innovative school called La Barranca, where 250 underprivileged kids can get a great education and spend some fun time outdoors, too. Playing golf, of course.
Lori Morgan, ultramarathon runner. I love looking behind me to the bottom of the mountain and thinking, wow, I can't believe how far I've come. Born 1975, United Kingdom. Once upon a time, there was a girl called Lori who loved to sing. She dreamt of becoming a professional singer. But life had other plans for the little girl, plans that would take her far, far away from the hills of South Wales, where she was born. Lori became an ultramarathon runner, someone who competes in races of great distances, in extreme environments. One day, as she ran through the Amazon jungle, exhausted and dripping with sweat, she wondered what life as a singer would have been like. A lot easier, that's for sure, she thought. She was running the jungle marathon, one of the toughest races on the planet. There were snakes in the trees and jaguars on the ground. She was attacked by angry hornets and had to swim across a river full of piranhas. It was terrifying, but she kept on going. She refused to give up. From one of the hottest places in the world, Lori then ran in one of the coldest, the Arctic. She was so cold and tired during that race that her mind started playing tricks. I saw a park bench on the ice and thought, how nice, I can sit down. But of course, it was not really there. Just when she felt she couldn't go on, something magical happened. She heard her mother's voice. Glory is not by never falling, her mother said, but in the way we rise when we do fall. Lori picked herself up and carried on, over the snow and ice, past reindeers and polar bears, until she reached the finish line in record time.
Luo Denping, extreme rock climber. I wanted to be a spider woman, so I asked my father to train me for it. Born 1980, China. Once upon a time, there was a girl named Luo who loved climbing. She lived in Guizhou, a spectacular place in southern China with towering rock outcrops, lush dense jungles, and terraced fields covering the hills. The men in Luo's village had a unique tradition. They climbed up and down the terrifyingly high cliffs with no climbing gear, no safety nets, nothing but their bare hands. They gathered medicinal herbs and collected swallow droppings to use as fertilizer. They were so agile and fast that people called them the Spider-Men. Luo's father was one of them. As a little girl, Luo used to watch him climb nimbly from one ledge to the next, hundreds of feet in the air. One day I'll do that, she thought to herself. When she turned 15, Luo started practicing on small slopes. She was the only female rock climber in Guizhou, and at first no one wanted to train her. But eventually she convinced her father to teach her all he knew. Soon she was climbing as high and as fast as any of the Spider-Men. She was strong, brave, and extremely good at finding cracks in the sheer rock face to grab hold of. Today, Luo is a professional climber. Tourists love to watch her death-defying feats. Her hands are rough and calloused from hanging onto the rocks, and she loves her work. When I get to the top, I wave the red flag, she says. It's a fantastic feeling, like I'm on top of the world. Everyone in her village is proud of Luo, their very own Spider-Woman.
Madame Saki, acrobat. Born February 26, 1786, died January 21, 1866, France. During the French Revolution, there was a short, stocky girl